So as the radical democracy continued over the years, it became obvious that the road to political power no longer lay in holding an elected political office, an elected office like, say, the archonship. No, the road to political power now lay in addressing assemblies, being persuasive, and as a result, building up a following. Solon's system had been for the non-nobles to acquire the necessary wealth to work their way into those top two property groups, the Pentecostia Medimnoi and the Hippes, and then as a result stand for the archonship. Solon had always seen the Areopagus and the Archons ruling in tandem. Now the switch from the direct election of Archons to their selection by lot in 487 may have played some role in the decreasing attraction of the archonships. But rhetoric was the nail in the coffin. Why bother standing for an office when you don't need to anymore, when you can stand up in front of the people in the assembly and, touch wood, persuade them to follow you? Solon's system was to all intents and purposes now obsolete. Ambitious men saw that the path to power lay in building this following in the assembly by persuading the masses to follow what they were saying. At the same time, it also gave these ambitious individuals the chance to move upwards socially in society, to be on some par, if you like, with their aristocratic peers, even if they were never, by birth, part of that same social grouping. That's why they may have wanted to exploit rhetoric as a means to the end of gaining power. Not necessarily, though, to do well for the city. There is a difference between gaining power for your own aims and then gaining power because you want to do well for the city. Now, these new speakers, that's these new non-nobles who appear in the assembly using rhetoric as a basis for building a following, these new speakers are given the collective name rhetores, or orators, because they use their oratorical ability to sway the audience to their side. And as a group over the decades, they had similar characteristics. And you see in rhetores, we get our word rhetoric. Just as the archaic age tyrants had had things in common, so the rhetores as a group had things in common. For example, they were all non-nobles. Hence, they didn't have the support network and family ties that the aristocrats had. Now, we'll be meeting one of these new men down the track during the Peloponnesian War who was not a non-noble, he was an aristocrat. This is someone called Alcibiades. But he's kind of the exception to the rule because Thucydides thinks he's a demagogue. Thucydides lumps him in with these rhetores because he believes that Alcibiades is venal. For the most part then, these rhetores are non-nobles. They had not held any military office, unlike Pericles, but remember he was an aristocrat. They had become wealthy through business and trade. And so they were the nouveau riche element of society that had decided that they too had the right to speak at assemblies. And so they began to do so. Now, needless to say, the aristocratic stratum of society was completely against people who they considered came from the wrong side of the tracks and shouldn't meddle in affairs that didn't concern them. Indeed, the Athenian upper class looked down its nose at anyone who was involved in manual labor of any description. So it didn't really matter how rich you were always going to come from the wrong side of the tracks. It's hard to communicate this very European attitude here in America where money is king. But folks like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett would have been scorned by the classical Athenians.